ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। सो टुडे वी आर रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 11 चैप्टर 28 टेक्स्ट नंबर 36। एतावान् आत्मा सम्मोहो यद् विकल्पस् तु केवले आत्मन् प्रते स्वं आत्मानं अवलंबो न यस्य हि एतावान् आत्मा सम्मोहो यत् विकल्पस्तु केवले आत्मनृते स्वं आत्मानं अवलंबो न यस्य हि एतावान् व्हाटएवर आत्मा ऑफ द सेल्फ सम्मोह डिल्यूजन यत् विच विकल्पः आइडिया ऑफ ड्युअलिटी तु बट केवले इन द यूनिक आत्मन इन द सेल्फ रिते विदाउट स्वम दैट वेरी आत्मानम सेल्फ अवलंबा बेसिस न देयर इज नॉट यस्य ऑफ विच ड्युअलिटी हि इंडीड। Translation by the servant service, Srila English Srila Prabhupada. Whatever apparent duality is perceived in the self is simply the confusion of the mind. Indeed, such supposed duality has no basis to rest upon apart from one's own soul. Translation responsibly. Whatever apparent duality is perceived in the self is simply the confusion of the mind. Indeed, such supposed duality has no basis to rest upon apart from one's own soul. Purport. As explained in verse 33 of this chapter, the eternal self is neither assumed nor lost, since every living entity is an eternal reality. The word vikalpa or duality here refers to the mistaken idea that the spirit soul is partly composed of matter in the form of the gross body or subtle mind. It is thus that foolish persons consider the material body or mind to be an intrinsic or fundamental component of the self. In fact, the living entity is pure spirit without any tinge of matter. Consequently, the false ego, which is generated by the false identification with matter, is a mistaken identity imposed upon the pure spirit soul. The sense of ego or I am, in other words, the sense of one's individual identity, comes from the spirit soul, because there is no other possible basis for such self-awareness. By studying one's false sense of ego, one can analytically understand that there is a pure ego, which is expressed by the words Aham Brahmasmi, I am pure spirit soul. One can easily understand in a similar way that there is a supreme spirit soul, the personality of Godhead, who is the omniscient controller of everything. Such understanding in Krishna consciousness constitutes perfect knowledge as described here by the Lord. Om Agyanati Marandasya Gyananjana Shalakya Chakshurumitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namah Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pangum Nangayati Giram Yat Kripatamam Vande Shri Guru Dhinatharinam Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadada Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So in this chapter, Krishna is describing the very basis of our conditioned life. So in this chapter, everything is being exposed. The material reality is being exposed. Because all the conditioned souls in the material world, they are thinking themselves to be a product of matter. That, in other words, that they are the gross body and the subtle mind. And because of this mistaken identity, their platform of happiness is not correct. Therefore, whatever they do, it leads to frustration. So in this chapter, Krishna is enlightening us about our true identity and how we are implicated in material existence, and how we can cut off this bond of false ego by association with saintly persons and by serving them. So the first ignorance is to identify ourselves with the gross material body. So this body is a bag of five elements: earth, water, fire, air, ether, like that. And then the second ignorance is to accept things in relationship to this material body. So this bondage is the very root cause of our suffering in this material world. You know, there's that verse, I forgot. Yasya Atma. Anyone remembers that? It's basically one who thinks the material body, which is made up of, you know. Yes, Atma Buddhi Kuna Petri Dhatuke. Anyone remembers? No, okay. So, basically the body is constituted of, what is it? Three Dhatuke. What's the three Dhatuke? Kapha, Pitta, Vayu. So this body is constituted of Kapha, Pitta, Vayu. So one who thinks the body to be the self, which is constituted of Kapha, Pitta, Vayu, and who thinks his kinsmen to be his own, you know, his relatives to be like, to consider his own relatives, and one who goes to a sacred place of pilgrimage, but just he goes there simply to take a bath, but he doesn't associate with the saintly persons. This kind of mentality is described like that of a cow or an ass. So therefore, which, in other words, this is the mentality of the animals. Isatma buddhi kunape tridhatuke. So one who considers the material body to be the self, the extensions of the body to also be the self, and sometimes these days people even don't go to a place of pilgrimage. These days the place of pilgrimage is music festivals, where crowds of 16,000 or more people come. So that is their yagya for this day and age. But anyway, countries like India, still some people go to a holy place. But their aim is not to associate with the devotees. Their aim is simply to, like, people go to Haridwar or Rishikesh, or they'll go to Prayag, the confluence, and then there they take a bath in the Ganges. And then they'll think, they'll try to get rid of their sinful reactions by taking a dip in the Ganges. But they don't associate with the saintly persons. Even in those places, it's hard to find the genuine saintly persons. They don't even endeavor to search for one. So in that way, they are misled, and they are still on the bodily platform. So the animal mentality is to consider oneself, or to think oneself, to be the material body, and extensions of the body to be the self. And the goal of animal life is to satisfy the bodily and mental needs. That's the whole goal of animal life. So we see animals are engaged in eating, sleeping, sex life, and defending. That's what animals are doing. So, but the human form of life is not meant for that. The human form of life, as it is mentioned in the purport, Aham Brahmasmi, it is meant to inquire into our true identity, who we are, what are we part of, and what are we doing here, and how to get out of here. So that's what human life is meant for, and to act in the capacity of the spirit soul. So, as you've heard many times in lectures, and Srila Prabhupada says, and so many lectures we have heard, that modern society is compared to two-legged animals, two-legged sophisticated animals. So an animal doesn't have to be on four legs. So an animal, this is the mentality. So one who is considering the body to be the self and trying to find happiness on the bodily platform is an animal. So this is the definition of an animal. So the definition is very, very broad. So that includes practically almost 99.999% of the people in this world. So that is a very unfortunate situation, and we are also coming from there. So animals engage in these four things, and the human beings are also engaging in these four things. So animals, they eat in a very gross way. You know, they'll dogs, they'll eat anything or anywhere on the street. And of course, these days, as yesterday we were hearing, they're sophisticated dog parlors. Diggy doggy, whatever. Or just past that, Victoria, on, what's that name of the robot? Perez Road, yeah. So I see that, it makes me laugh all the time. So even these days, dogs are also very sophisticated. But most animals are not, but some, the pets are very sophisticated. They all live a much more sophisticated life than us. So, but the point is, the mentality is the same. Human beings are, animals are engaged in eating, we are engaged in eating. Then animals are sleeping. They sleep anywhere on the street. But we make very elaborate arrangements for sleeping. And then there is mating. Animals are doing that, human beings are doing that in much more sophisticated ways. Okay, they are canvassing in their own way, you know. You can learn a lot from the pigeons out there. So many pigeons are here. So, you know, the male pigeon canvasses, the female pigeon canvasses. So we are doing the same thing. We are doing it in our own ways. So that's going on. And then there is defense. So animals have claws, sharp teeth. You know, porcupine has very sharp hair. You know, it's like a bomb. So human beings, we have nuclear bombs, missiles, guided missiles. Guided missiles in the hands of unguided men. So we are doing the same thing, but in a much more sophisticated way. So, but the underlying mentality is the same. What's the difference between the animals and the humans? It's the same thing. The underlying mentality is that the animals are trying to lord it over material nature. So we are doing the same thing. We are trying to lord it over. And we are considering the body to be the self and the mind to be the self, and trying to seek happiness on that platform. And by doing these things, we actually haven't solved the problems of the world. The problems have got more complicated. You know, so there is no temporary, there is no permanent convenience. It's all for temporary. So in other words, we haven't made any advancement. Simply to be dressed up in a nice suit, or to drive a nice car, or to wear nice clothes, doesn't mean we are very advanced. But the underlying mentality, or the underlying consciousness, is the same. So to tell somebody, when somebody reads Srila Prabhupada's books, it is actually a big blow to their false ego. Because Srila Prabhupada very plainly states, you know, you're an animal. You know, like this is a sophisticated, well-dressed, polished animal. So that's why distribution of this literature is very nice. It brings people to their senses, at least for some time. If they pursue it, it's nice. That's why we have to hear Krishna Katha all the time, so it can smash a false ego. So the root cause of all bondage is ignorance. And so what is the basic principle of ignorance? We have heard many times in Srila Prabhupada's books. Pumsa Sriya Maithuni Bhava Metam. That sex life is the very basis of material existence. The attraction between male and female is the basis of material existence. And on the basis of this attraction, you know, all one thinks the extension of the body to be the self. So, janasya moho yam aham mameti. So, therefore, one thinks oneself in terms of I and mine. So, that is the very basis of material existence. So we think we are this body, and then this is our children, this is my life, this is my car, and then we need money to support all that, we need a house, like that. In that way, material existence carries on, and it gets more and more complicated. So, but the illusion is we are thinking that we are in control. But as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Prakriti Kriyamanani Gunai Karmani Sarvasha Ahankar Vimudatma Karta Aham Itina Manyate. That the spirit soul, bewildered by influence of false ego, considers himself to be the doer of activities. But in actuality, material nature is carrying out all of these activities. So we are simply like puppets in the hands of material nature. And in Bhagavad Gita, that's illustration of, the puppets. Material nature is controlling everyone like puppets. So that's very appropriate. So once somebody was showing a book to someone, and they said, one guy actually figured it out. He said, quite intelligent. He said, so we are controlled by material nature, is that right? And I said, yes, everyone is controlled by material nature. We all are like puppets. We are like in the hands of material nature. But under the influence of false ego, we are thinking ourselves to be the supreme controller, supreme enjoyer, and supreme proprietor. So that's the influence of the false ego. So the false ego is very, very strong. But the aim of life is to understand Aham Brahmasmi, that I'm a spirit soul, eternal servant of Krishna. And the only thing we possess is actually, we actually don't possess anything, if we philosophically see. Okay, at least, if we read, that we actually don't possess anything. Everything belongs to Krishna. The only thing we possess, which is our intrinsic quality, the dharma, is to render service to Krishna. That's the only thing we possess, to render service. Actually, apart from that, we don't possess anything. So, this body and mind belongs to material nature. The spirit soul is the superior energy of Krishna. Everything is Krishna. Only thing we possess is to render service to Krishna. Therefore, the illusion is opposite of that. We are trying to be the supreme enjoyer, supreme controller, and supreme proprietor. That's what we are thinking. And whatever is in relationship to the body, we accept as the self. So the reason we are here in this material world is to facilitate this illusion. Actually, Krishna did not want us to be here. But because we are arrogant, we have, we have harassed Krishna. We want to be here. So Krishna has to facilitate this fool's paradise. So we are in a fool's paradise, where we are thinking we are a supreme controller, enjoyer and proprietor. But in actuality, it's the opposite. Every moment, we are getting smashed by the laws of nature. But still, we are thinking like that, because of the influence of the false ego. So therefore, real happiness lies in service to Krishna. Because that's the only thing we possess, service to Krishna. Therefore, real happiness lies in rendering service, devotional service to Krishna. And if we try to lord it over material nature, we won't be happy. Even in devotional service, if we try to lord it over, we'll be frustrated in our attempts. Therefore, whatever service we are doing, it has to be in the mood of a servant. Because the false ego is in the mood of the master. I'm the enjoyer. Everyone goes to university to get a master's degree. No one goes to university to acquire a servant's degree. That is actually a great embarrassment if we think we are the servant. But everyone wants to be the master. I'm a master of this. I'm an MBA. I'm a this. I'm a that. So, but real happiness lies in service to Krishna. At least philosophically, we should understand that and try to act in that mentality. So in the material world, everyone is trying to aspire for a higher and higher position where they can lord it over others. So everyone is trying to be the controller. So that's why people want to take the position of a minister or a big post where they can lord it over others. Or the ultimate illusion is to think oneself to be God. So that's the ultimate illusion. So even in Krishna consciousness, actually we should not aspire for a big position, because that is very dangerous for our advancement. We should not aspire for it, but sometimes, a leadership role is given to us. Sometimes you are made in charge, of the ashram or whatever. Or you are made in charge of the temple. But actually, we should not aspire for that. Because our tendency is to think, because the false ego is very strong, as it is mentioned in the we are fully purified. It's like the false ego can come back again. We can anytime have a relapse. all the time. You know, relapses are very common because we are diseased. So therefore we should not aspire for that. But sometimes in the Lord's service we are given a position of responsibility. Then we have to try to act in the mood of a servant. So whether we are leader or, you know, whatever position we have, the whole idea is to consider oneself as a servant. Otherwise, Krishna has to make some arrangements to smash a false ego. And we see that with Indra, Krishna did that. Because Indra got very puffed up. He thought himself that he is the supreme controller. And who is this Krishna? You know, everyone is worshipping him. They have stopped my sacrifice, you know, which every year they do Indra Puja. And now they are doing Govardhan Puja at the recommendation of this small boy. You know, who is this small boy? So, you know, who does he think himself to be? So then he sent some worship clouds, and as you know, the past time there was so much rain for 7 days, and Krishna lifted the Govardhan hill on his pinky finger to smash his pride. So Krishna does that. Okay, that's with Indra, but Krishna will do that with us also in different ways. Like I was reflecting on this incident which happened to me on books during the marathon. It was actually I was getting proud. I was getting proud, I was distributing so many books very quickly. And then this one person came, he was drunk. And he didn't like Indians. So I showed him the book, and the next second I found the book in my hands and my face was hurting. He actually hit the book really hard on my face and went away. So that time, and that caused a lot of embarrassment because so many people were around there, and there was a big scene, you know, everyone stopped and everyone is staring at me. So it was very embarrassing. So at that time I was thinking maybe something wrong with him, but later reflecting was actually because I was getting proud, and so Krishna smashed the pride. So in this way we have relapses all the time, and then Krishna has to smash a pride. But we have to carry on with the service. So for each of us, Krishna will try to smash the false ego in different ways. So therefore, if we act in the mood of a master, then that will actually cause bondage in the material world. So if we are rendering service, or you know, people act in the mood of a master, in the mentality, that actually implicates them more and more in material existence. The example is given of a web. You know, you see sometimes a mosquito or a fly gets stuck in a web. Especially on cars, you can see the spider webs. They like the windscreens. They like the side view mirrors. They like the rear view mirrors for some reason. They make a cobweb around that. And if the car hasn't been washed for quite a while, you can see, you know, some insect is stuck there. So, and the insect will try to liberate himself, you know, by struggling. But actually what happens, the insect or fly gets more and more implicated. So, similarly, when we are acting in the mood of a master or a controller, we actually get more and more implicated. So, in the material world, everyone is making so many plans to counteract the laws of material nature. They are trying to make a permanent solution. They are trying to counteract the laws of nature. But what is happening, they are getting more and more entangled. Srila Prabhupada says in that verse, Namam Dishkudrunu Muda, that so many planning commissions, they are trying to come up with so many plans. But material nature is so powerful that material nature is smashing all their plans to dust. So we see, like in Queensland, there's these huge floods. They're saying it is the size of France and Germany combined. That much area is flooded. The entire size of New South Wales is flooded. And yesterday, Rockhampton was fully cut off. No rail access, no road, no air access, only helicopter access. So, you know, they are trying to come up with so many plans. Because people don't want floods, they make dams. So dams are constructed to stop floods. That's one reason. Other reason is to have electricity, so they can facilitate this. But, you know, demigods are very powerful. For them, you know, crossing over some levees or dam, you know, no big deal. flood will come, it will, and actually then they are living on low level areas, and then all that gets flooded. Actually floods are good for, in one sense, floods are good because it actually purifies the ecosystem. But now, because everyone is living an artificial way of living, so they have got rid of the marshlands and the wetlands, and now when the floods come, everything gets so there is contamination, and then there's a big headache. Rather learn how to live with that, how to deal with that. So modern civilization is an artificial way of living, and because of that, they're actually complicating their life, and material nature frustrates all their plans step by step. So because they're acting in this mood of supreme controller, enjoy, proprietor, and in that mood they are actually getting more and more implicated in material existence. It is like the fly. So the only way to come out is when somebody takes the fly out. The fly cannot, or it's like you get stuck in a marshland. Once it happened to me, we were cycling in India, and what do you call that? You know, those, you put your foot on the road. Quick sand, yeah, thank you. So once we were riding and a ball fell in the quicksand. And me and my friend foolishly went inside to take it out. And then we realized we're actually going inside, we're sinking. And we're trying to come out, but we're actually going inside and inside. We're getting sucked. And then by the mercy of some villager was passing by, and he took us out. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here, we would be in there. So in that way, we actually get more and more implicated if we act in that capacity. So, as I said before, the basic principle of material existence is sex life. So, the modern civilization is actually aggravating that disease. That our conditioned life is simply a disease. So, modern civilization is fueling that disease. So, Krishna says, Kama, Esha, Krodha, Esha, Rajo, Guna, Samud, Bhava. So, this lust is the all-devouring sinful enemy of this world. And in today's society, lust is actually glorified. If you tell somebody you're very lusty, they'll take it as a compliment. So, you know, that's the condition of the modern day society. So, you know, you read, there's so many songs, you know, I'm very lusty, this or that. That is actually, that is glorified. And in the music concert, we were hearing like horrible, horrible songs, horrible lyrics. They're swearing, this and that, it was terrible. And we have to put the kirtan so loud, so we can counteract that. So they're actually glorifying all these base qualities. But Vedic civilization is the opposite of that. So in the Vedic civilization, one understands that, so that is the advancement of civilization. One understands that this is, we are diseased. Okay, we are diseased, and we have to do something about it. So we are in this hospital. This ISKCON is a hospital. So we all are disease patients. You know, we have a disease to different degrees. The covering of lust is to different degrees, as the embryos to the womb, like that. So we have this covering to different degrees, and we have to try to cure it. So we all have it. You know, we have to admit it. We have it. So we have to now. We have to work on the solution. So if we don't work on it, simply our attachments to this material world simply increase. So even in Krishna consciousness, there is family life. But that family life is different from Grihamedi life. Because in Grihamedi life, Grihamedi life is actually to make one think that they are God. Because we want to think we are God. That's why Krishna has facilitated his fool's paradise. And so the Grihamedi thinks, I am the lord of what I survey, I can order, these are my children, I can order them what to do. And I have my family, I have my unit. So like Krishna has his parts and parcels, so we have our parts and parcels. So in that way, that is Grihamedi life. But in Krishna consciousness, family life is different. There, one is supposed to have the consciousness that everything belongs to Krishna. I am not the proprietor. Krishna is the proprietor. And this is, you know, This is not my wife, this is Krishna's wife. These are Krishna's children. I have to make them Krishna conscious. And in that capacity, one has to act. So that is a totally different way of living. And in modern society, this is like unheard of, you know. If you tell somebody this, they'll be like, you know, you are nuts. What's wrong with you? So basically, Krishna consciousness is simple living and high thinking. But modern materialistic life is high living and low thinking. So you can see, the skyscrapers are going higher and higher. Like in Dubai, they have constructed this highest skyscraper in the world. How many stories? I can't. It's like, I saw a picture, it's massive, you know, it's massive. It's like a kilometer high or something like that. So in Melbourne, we have the Eureka Towers, the highest in the southern hemisphere. So people are going higher and higher, but their thinking is going lower and lower. But in Varnashram Dharma, or Vedic civilization, it is simple living and high thinking. Or we can be living in an apartment building high up, but still our point is we have to be simple. For those living in high-rise buildings, I'm not trying to criticize Brahmakund Prabhu. But which floor are you on? Fifth, you're not too high. So now the point is simple living, high thinking. So, but in Kali Yuga, it is exactly the opposite of that. So therefore, in spiritual life, therefore we have Varnashram Dharma. We have the four ashrams: Brahmacharya, Grihastha, Vanaprastha and Sannyas. So the Brahmacharya ashram is the training ground, as Prabhupada says, for the attached and the non-attached. So the Brahmacharya ashram is the training ground where one has to learn how to live simply. Because if we don't learn how to live simply, you know, later you enter Grihastha life, it gets worse. Then actually one's Krishna consciousness will shake. So in Brahmachari life, Brahmacharini life, one has to learn how to live simply. So what does a Brahmachari need? Few pieces of cloth, you know, a bed to lie down or a floor to lie down on, one locker. Okay, these days you need a laptop, few other paraphernalia. But actually it's very simple life. The only thing Brahmachari has is to render service to Guru and Gauranga. That's what it is. Our life is fully dedicated to that. So when one desires to change ashram, then one should carry on the same mood. If the men and the women don't have this training, then it just gets worse. And if the woman pushes the man, you know, go and bring the stuff, bring the goodies, then, you know, okay, man has a certain kind of karma. He'll get what is destined to him. So if you push, then okay, has to miss class, has to miss Mangalarti, everything. Still you get the same stuff. So better to be satisfied with what you have. So I was hearing this lecture by Bhaktivedanta Puna Maharaj. He was saying, the man has to learn to be sensitive to the needs of the wife, and the wife has to learn to be satisfied with what the man can provide. Otherwise the whole, he was saying that the reason so many marriages fail is because it boils down to these things. That's what he was saying. So I was reflecting on that, and that's a very good point. So therefore, simple living and high thinking. So one has to make one's life as much simple as possible, so we can devote as much time for Krishna consciousness. So one has to see, one has to reflect in one's own, you know, what things I don't need. You know, do I really need this car? Do I really need an expensive big house? Mm-hmm. Or what do I need? So in that way we can make our life simple and devote time for Krishna consciousness, because Krishna consciousness is the medicine for the stubborn false ego. So Krishna katha is the medicine. So it's all about hearing and chanting. So if we devote time for that, then we can smash the false ego. Otherwise the false ego will, it's like adding fuel to the fire. The false ego will inflame. Otherwise, as it is described, otherwise we are like the fly in the web or the deep dark well, in which, you know, in India, I was hearing this lecture by Jayadratha Maharaj. He was saying in India sometimes there are these wells which are covered by grass. So you think it's nice soft grass and you walk, and then you're deep down in the well. And it's in a village, so there's no one around. Even if you cry for help, no one will come to save you. So that's the condition of, you know, modern people. Very, very unfortunate. So it is our responsibility as devotees to try to take them out of this deep dark well. So Srila Prabhupada said, the way you can show your love for me is to cooperate with each other and propagate this Krishna consciousness movement for the benefit of suffering humanity. So in that way, we can ourselves smash a false ego, and Prabhupada can smash the false ego of others and try to come out of material existence. So that is the best way. So in whatever capacity we can do to try to propagate Krishna consciousness in our own capacity. So this Yoga Dharma is the Sankirtan Yajna, so the chanting of the holy name. So the chanting is of two types. So one is Japa and the other is Kirtan. So everything actually, I was hearing this lecture by my Guru Maharaj, he was saying everything actually expands from our Japa. So the Sankirtan is actually an expansion of the chanting we are doing. So the chanting of the Hare Krishna Mahamantra on Japa is the very basis of our spiritual life. So we have to try to take that very seriously. So we have to, as Vyasaki Prabhu was, he actually emphasized a lot on the chanting, and he even held his chanting seminars, which unfortunately we couldn't attend. So in that, emphasizing how chanting is very important, and how if you don't do it properly, there's a right way of doing things and there's a wrong way of doing things. If you don't do it properly, then down the track we'll have problems in our spiritual life. So therefore, you know, rising early in the morning is very important. This is our eternal office. We have our whole life. It's not something we only do when we live in the ashram. So this is something you have to do our whole life. So better to try to do it nicely. And then chanting is actually our eternal occupation. So that the chanting of the Hare Krishna Mahamantra even goes on in the spiritual world. So it is not only for a few short years or this lifetime. We have to do it eternally. So better to develop a taste for it. Otherwise, whole life will be a struggle. Easier said than done. So we have to endeavor in that way. So therefore, rising early, trying to chant around in association with devotees. Best to chant in the temple. So chant like that. And in that way, then the service we do is actually an expansion. And then we get enthusiasm and taste for doing other kinds of services. And then the preaching we do is actually an expansion of our chanting. And I was hearing my spiritual master was saying that the mistake devotees make is that they get too much into projects, which is important, but they forget the very basis, which is the chanting. So they'll compromise on the chanting, and then they'll do all these projects. Then after a while, they'll wonder what happened to my spiritual life. So the chanting of the Hare Krishna Mahamantra is the very basis of our spiritual life. So I'll just stop here and see if there's any questions, comments or corrections. Mahatma Prabhu. Okay. Are they? Okay.
Yeah.
Really?
What? Like a butler or a servant, you know, you get to go to school and learn how to do it, you get a degree sort of thing to do it. So then when you go to a job with some rich people, yes, I've been to this school where they, it's like a university for servants.
I didn't get what you said. Could you repeat?
I said there is a school for servants. When you get a degree, you go there and learn how to serve people, you know, rich people, if you want to be a butler or a servant, and then you get like a degree, so when you go for a job, you get it, and this is the other type of university where you learn to be a servant.
Yeah, that servantship is, you know, all external.
Oh, I realise that.
Yeah.
But you're saying they go to university to become a master.
True,
a master
true, yeah.
Degree. There's also schools where you get a master's degree for becoming a servant. And it's the other type of university where you get a master's degree, and if you become one, probably that's where you've got your master's.
Yeah, but even Prabhupada thinks himself to be the servant of a spiritual master. That's right. We treat Prabhupada as servant. Oh, sorry, as master. I'm sorry. But Prabhupada... Yeah. The servant degree in material world is all external.
Yeah.
Only internally they're thinking, I'm master, you know. How can I control my boss? Yeah, thank you, it's nice. I didn't know that. Yes, Mahatma Prabhuji.
You were telling you were stuck, so same telling you want to be anything.
Stuck in quicksand.
What was the question?
He's saying that, could I elaborate that when, on how I was stuck in the quicksand and how I got out? Well, it's not really, you know, worth elaborating. There are better things to hear than that. He just threw a ball there, and the ball was very dear to us, and we went inside foolishly, and then realized that with the ball we are also going inside, and then crying for help, and then somebody came and helped us. That's it. The desire to be?
The best that you can
possibly
be. Does that derive from the soul, level of the soul, or level of the ego?
Okay. On one level, it is on the false ego. False ego platform is to try to be the best, to try to impress everyone, to get profit, adoration, distinction. Then on the other side, we want to do the best service for Krishna. But still, hearing this lecture by Radhanath Maharaj, he was saying that a devotee should want to do the best service, but at the same time he wants to be the lowest. That's what Maharaj was saying. He wants to do it very nicely, but at the same time be the lowest. It's very difficult.
If someone is a devotee and they have leadership qualities, for instance, should they aspire to be?
They should not aspire to be, but they should be engaged like that. For that devotee, she should not aspire. Because aspiring means then we want to grow. So, but at the same time, whoever is on top of that devotee, whoever is his authority, they should engage that person like that. If that person is qualified to take that responsibility. Because we have a conditioned nature, and our conditioned nature has to be engaged, otherwise we get, you know, frustrated. But at the same time, our authority should see, oh, when is that person actually ready to take on that role? Not prematurely. So, in the beginning, have to go through the hard yards. Yeah. And we've seen, like, prematurely, you know, it's gone. What's happened? You know, it goes to our head and we get carried away and just fully blow it. And we fry out other devotees and ourselves get fried. Then it's a big thing, you know, if you're in a position of responsibility. Others can leave because of you. Yeah. Yeah, Prabhupada was not affected at all because he was on the pure spiritual platform. Yeah. But we have to be very careful. Anything else? Chandrasekhar Babu? Thank you very much, Granth Raj, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki.